Hello, everyone, and welcome in to Smashbox TV Podcast 439. Terry Miller, the disc golf guy, in studio next to Johnny V.
When do we get an off season? I'm just curious, Terry, because it feels like every week we have so much to talk about. There's so many things going on. The off season feels busier for news, less repetitive. Like during the season, it's always like, all right, who won? Let's talk to them. Oh, good. You shot 1,080 round. You're really good. It's the off season where all the cool, fun stuff, unexpected things happen. There's controversies. There's drama. There's, you know, there's new tours. There's new broadcasts. There's so much stuff going on, Terry Miller.
Yeah, well, I'm just going to skip all that and head to Thailand. I'm out. Okay. Oh, wait, I'm doing work there, too. Never mind.
When do you leave for Thailand?
Saturday.
Saturday.
Yeah, Saturday. So here's the forewarning. Depending on how things shake out with travels, I may or may not be available come next Tuesday.
You've joined us from Thailand before on the course, which is my favorite.
And a recent photo was reposted of that, thanks to our friend Kinga, over there in Australia. He had posted a great photo of when I was sitting there talking with Nigel from right there on the course. There might be some of that, and there's probably going to be a number of check-ins, but they may not be at the most opportune times overall for people here in the U.S. But I'll be doing plenty of check-ins from all around the travels.
Well, if you can't join us,
I'll let you know.
Awesome. I mean, let me know, and then I'll find someone to interview, or we'll have a guest host or something. You know, there's always lots to
talk
about.
You'll try and find a way to get by. You'll try to survive.
I will try to survive like Gloria Gaynor. I will survive.
Yes, you will.
Or cake. Either one. Your choice, people. Cake is awesome, too.
Yeah.
We listened to that a lot in college.
Yeah, I was just going to say, I feel like hearing my sweet mate playing that quite a bit. Tonight, we've got a pretty sweet show, speaking of some cake. We got a great show lined up. We're going to have Andrew Marweed. He's going to be joining us in just a few moments. If somehow you didn't know what was going on at the Shelly Sharp, then you weren't paying attention to the YouTubes. But this weekend, we had the A-Tier taking place, the Shelly Sharp Memorial presented by Spinners on the Green. I had the pleasure of, again, being there in attendance and capturing the action. So Andrew Marweed is going to join us. And then shortly after Andrew Marweed joins us, an Arizona resident and also winner of this weekend, one Jennifer Allen. She'll be joining us. And then, because there's so many things, as you said, going on, various tours, there's European contingencies and conversations, but there's also some very specific women's only based events that are taking place. And we hear of the tours, we talk of them frequently, and we reference them. And we want to shed a little, shine a little spotlight on one of them that's going on down in Texas. I was going to say Florida as well, but in Texas, we're going to talk to Chrissy Fountain. She's got some information about taking place down there, wildflower tour and tournaments taking place. So we got a jam-packed show. Lots of action tonight.
We do. Maybe I'll work with one of the women's tours about getting that little tour on Skip Ace.
I like it.
Yeah, you know, how much fun would that be for them? A lot of fun.
Probably a lot of fun.
A lot of fun. Who doesn't like to bet on themselves?
Depending when some of these people go and create their own contracts year in and year out, we'll see who's placing their biggest bets. But so thank you for joining us. Looking forward to having all these great chats tonight. And our very first guest is ready to go. He's in our green room, Disc Baron Digital Green Room, and we're going to welcome him to the show. One, Andrew Marweed. What?
How's it going, guys?
Have you ever been introduced with a what before? I'm just curious.
That's the first time.
Okay, good. Hopefully the last. Let me just put it that way.
A long weekend of commentating alone gets you sometimes a little bit silly, and you can see Vista so many times before you're starting to run out of things you want to talk about. So, Andrew, welcome to the show. Let's get this out of the way right off the bat. This is the hard-hitting stuff people need to know.
All right.
Do you go by Andy?
I go by Andy and Andrew.
Because almost every time I've referenced you, I know every time I have, and most of the world references you, I feel like, by Andrew, at least the disc golf community. And so we want to know if it's acceptable, largely because we think of a Nathan Queen, who he's not a Nate. And most of the time, abbreviations happen. In your case, you're cool with it. You're an Andy and an Andrew.
Yeah, they both work. Whatever comes out of your mouth first works for me.
Okay. Yeah. Well, good. Now we got that all cleared up. Yeah, Andrew just sounds so formal and official when you're dominating.
Andy sounds like...
If I'm
you know, an AM1 player. Andrew sounds like a DGPT champion.
Point. Yeah.
If I'm sending an email, it'll be Andrew. If I'm sending a text message, it'll probably say Andy.
How did you sign Shelly Sharp Memorial Champion autographs? Like, there had to be a few thousand of those.
There was actually just one. There was a kid before the last round who actually bought one of my Hurricanes in the shop, I think. So he came up and asked me to sign it right before. It's Andrew, so.
It doesn't get any better than that. A kid picking up a signature disc to then go out and have you sign it. Let's talk about that. First of all, congratulations, of course, on the victory, and we'll get into a few more details. But in a very non-jerkish way, I feel like I overheard someone say, well, but wait a minute, it feels like the crowd's larger for the chase card than it was for the lead card at the end. And I feel like, is that something those players have earned? And clearly you're winning, you're dominating this tournament, but does that offend you or upset you knowing that sometimes these other names maybe have a larger crowd?
I mean, I personally didn't really care. There was a significant amount more people watching Chase Card for sure. There was, I forget everybody who was on Chase Card, but at least three, probably if not all four, were big names, you know, 10, 20 mm-hmm. rated plus. And I think two of the guys on lead card last round, I believe, might have been their first lead card, or at least maybe on coverage at least. So, you know, we were even talking, and they were kind of happy that there wasn't a huge crowd, you know, take some of the nerves off. And for me, it didn't really matter. I try not to think about other people or other cards too much. I kind of knew the position I was in, and, you know, if I just stuck to my game plan and even honestly just took pars, it was, you know, probably going to be okay. So,
yeah,
it didn't matter too much.
I was just going to say, I think I heard the perfect response. I think it was somebody else on the card, the lead card, had said, like, hey, we need to earn some of that fanfare yet. And that's not, it's just a matter of where you are in your career. A lot of you guys are a little bit earlier in your professional career on a larger stage. And so that makes sense. I mean, people know what they're going to get if they're watching an Aaron Gossage and a Kale and a Drew. Those were the other, you know, three bigger names, we'll say, established names out there on that Chase card. And I didn't think there should be anything offensive about it, but no, I think it's just all part of the journey.
I mean, I think Andy's breaking hearts, because if you're following that second card, you're hoping to see an enormous comeback. Like, wow, Kale shot a 17 under to come back to win. You know, but no, Andrew's out here putting his foot down.
Yeah, it was awesome to watch. You were so consistent throughout the weekend. Talk about this course, and as we were playing Vista and the new changes that were to it this year, talk about the course and how it suits your game.
Yeah, so I would say the course suits my game pretty well. There's definitely more backhands than there are forehands. So I was trying to play the backhand shot smart. If you watched all of the rounds, you know, most of them weren't smart. I think one of the times I missed the Mando, I was just trying to lay up and I just shanked it. So, but the forehand holes, yeah, I played those extremely well, most every single one. So for some reason, the forehand was super dialed this weekend. But the changes are, they're hard. I forget who else said it, but I was playing with somebody, and he I think he said it played about four strokes harder than previous years. Whether that number is accurate or not, I'm not sure. But the holes that are changed, they're a lot harder. So whether it be Mando's or an extra 70 feet when you're throwing uphill over water, it makes a difference. So when it comes to Memorial, when there's, you know, probably even more of a top-heavy field and people that throw 500 feet, it might not make a huge difference, but I like the changes for the most part, probably mostly because I played well, but it's definitely a lot tougher of a course.
Yeah, a lot of people were saying that it was, for someone like you who maybe it doesn't have the best distance, to come out and win at Vista is an accomplishment, because we've seen in the past the people who have won or have dominated on this course, your Paul McBeths, your Anthony Barellas, Adam Hammes, things like that, that they come out and just usually in what's known as kind of a fairly wide open course, come out and crush. You're more of a technician, as people would say. You've even said it yourself. You prefer the second half of the season because those are your style of courses growing up, you know, with them. What was it about this weekend on a course where, you know, you you don't see a lot of trees that had you dialed in.
You know, it's honestly a good question. Not to say that I wasn't trying to win, but I wasn't expecting too much going in because I didn't have a whole lot of practice after getting here. And then once we got to Arizona, I got a pretty gnarly blood blister on my finger. So I wasn't even playing a couple days before the tournament. But thankfully, it healed up just enough and seemed to work out for me. But what worked well for me at this course, I think, was staying in bounds. Not so much the last round. I had some, you know, OB shots, but luckily I made a lot of circle two putts to save my par. But the first two rounds that kind of put me in the lead and, you know, have a nice separation, I think, was staying in bounds. I might have only been out of bounds or missed a Mando, you know, one or two times, I think, where I'm sure there was a lot more. That was a bigger number for most other people at this course. So I think my, you know, game plan of playing smart on most holes, you know, it worked and it worked well for me. So that was probably the separation, I would think.
Yeah, and I'll add to that. You played what I feel like is standard for you, which is you didn't miss a putt. I mean, at one point, I think in the first round, your putter hadn't touched the ground. And I know you're kind of used to that. Not everyone else is.
That's a good point. Yeah, I was 100% on circle one the entire tournament. And then I don't know what my circle two stats were, but I didn't have any looks the first round, and I probably made about half. So I did putt very well, which helps. So,
Yeah, I'll spoil it just a little bit in that there was a moment where I thought, well, I'm going to try and get a little bit of an artistic kind of a different look or vantage point for a putt of yours or for a putt. I just wanted to change it up a little. And I was like, oh, well, it feels silly when you're the only cameraman to go after this weird angle, because if you miss, it doesn't pay off. And then I was like, no, I'm going to do it when Andrew's putting. because he's, and sure enough, hole six, final round, or second round, or both, whatever. I know that was one instance. And then even on hole one during the final round, I put the camera literally on the ground just to kind of get a unique angle. And of course you made it. I was like, oh yeah, I know if I want to go for a unique angle, I'll just do it when this guy's putting. He doesn't miss. So thank you. Thank you for making those, you know, decisions appear to be a little bit smarter on my end. As we were closing out, one of the things that you talked about was that you just got into the Memorial. You just got in off the wait list. So, of course, you're going to be back here in a few weeks at that course, I should say. What is it about either that course or the schedule that is making you want to hit certain things? Because we know a lot of players are concerned about the pro tours, some of the silver events, and then they either take weekends off or they fill them with other events. But Memorial, you know, is it just because it makes sense logistically then?
Yeah, it's kind of like, you know, back on the way to Texas from Vegas, I believe is where it falls. And yeah. I've played Memorial the last few years. I think I took seventh there last year after shooting hot round at Vista final round. So I've played some really good rounds at Fountain in the past. I've never really played four rounds of really hot golf, but I played there the last few years. I've always really loved the courses if I can play well, I guess. And then I just like being in Arizona from coming from Michigan in the winter. You know, it was a little chilly this weekend, but I'm just happy to be somewhere where it's warm and can play some disc golf.
Yeah, a lot of people from Arizona were not thrilled with the 52 to 58 degrees we had most of the time.
Almost perfect.
Yeah, people like all three of us here, would take it just with no problems. But in Arizona, by Arizona's standards.
I get it. I mean, don't get me wrong. I'd love like another 8 degrees on there, but I'll take 52 over, you know, what we have right now.
Yeah, so not too bad.
Exactly.
What is your game plan? A lot of people would want to know what is your touring life look like for this year?
My touring life, I guess tournament schedule wise, I'm playing most of the pro tour. I think there's only two, maybe three I'm not playing, California. And then I have to, unfortunately miss Idlewild this year. Mm. So, that's a couple. And then I'm doing more than half, I think, of the Silver Series. So yeah, most of them, definitely enough to qualify for, you know, whatever number you take for the Elite Series and Silver Series to, you know, get those points.
I've got to assume Idlewild falls on a wedding weekend for somebody.
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay, is it your wedding?
No, it's not. It's a buddy from Michigan.
Okay. Just I wouldn't think you'd put your own wedding on that particular weekend. It's just so funny that it's also so predictable. That's about the only reason we see players not at a particular event on any given week. And you know, these days is specifically due to a wedding. And then international, that's not on the plans for this year, or is it?
No, not this year. My girlfriend Lindsay and I are hoping to, hopefully next year would be super fun, you know, try to do a couple or a few, who knows, but not this year, no.
Okay. So last year, of course, you went over to DGA, you had the new contract. I think it kind of took a few people by surprise even that, you know, you had switched sponsors. DGA clearly has been investing in a number of really solid players. They've always had a team, but it feels like they've really stepped it up in the last couple of years in making these acquisitions that they have. If you had to give yourself a grade for your first year with a new sponsor in DGA last year, how would you rate your own season? You personally, if you reflect on it,
my own season, ooh, that's tough. Probably like a, I guess like a B plus. I guess I don't know. It was kind of tough the first couple months getting used to the disc, just like mm-hmm. anybody who, you know, switches manufacturers. But I mean, I've always been a pretty good putter, but switching putters has really helped, I guess. Putting with something with a little more glide. You know, I put with the Splatterstone Steady BLs. They made a new run for me last year, and they're coming up with a new run for this year that releases in about a month. So I've been putting extremely well with those, and that has just elevated my game, because most of the time if I'm trying to survive out on tour, my putter has to be fire. So that's been working out really well.
Okay. And, well, of course, the board's wondering, Is there any limited edition or special edition or signature cookie minis or putters or anything of that in the works? I mean, are you leaning into that?
Cookie putters? No, not really. There'll be some good stuff coming out, you know, from a couple different places. So I can't spell too much, but nothing too crazy. But it's enough to spark some interest for sure.
I love it. Also sparking interest, we saw just before the event this weekend, I think I saw it on the TikToks or the Facebooks or somewhere, a new extension as well with one of your other sponsors. Of course, you have DGA and you have Squatch, but talk to us about your other contract extension and sponsorship.
Yeah, I re-signed with Great Lakes Disc. They're a store in Grand Rapids, Michigan. I signed with them for 5 more years. I've been with them, I think this will be my 5th year, so made sense for on your 5th year to sign for 5 more years. But Shay and Brian from Great Lakes, we just decided it made sense. You know, they're great guys. I've been with them for a while. Back in my home state of Michigan, they have every manufacturer. They've been a huge, you know, influx of DGA, especially this last year. So they've been a huge supporters of me over the last few years, and it's only getting bigger. They're redoing their store. And I'm really excited for the next 5 years with them, for sure.
Some people would want to know, because we often get a little glimpse of what a bag sponsor and or a manufacturer sponsor look like and what that can consist of. Share whatever details you can. But what is when a store like that sponsors you and you sign on with 5 years, what are some of the types of things within that relationship or that contract that you can share? Like what does that mean to you and to them?
I guess to them, it was mostly the relationship, you know, being both in Michigan, I know them both personally very well. We kind of both knew that, hey, I wasn't going to leave and you're not going to drop me, so let's just do 5 more years, you know? So we're very close with each other. So it just made sense. But, on my end, they have a lot of my like fundraiser discs they hold stock of a lot of different discs with my name on it. And they've even had a limited edition this last year, my putter. So they were the only store to get that. So they have had limited editions and in hopes of doing more limited editions as well. So you can only get, you know, Andrew Marui DGA discs from them. So there'll be some special things with them going on throughout the years for sure.
And so congratulations on that. I know that's not as common, and so that really kind of stands out that you have a 5-year deal with a retailer. And then I don't know how many people have then reached out since I lobbed out the question this weekend about you possibly being a sweatshirt model. Is that has that had any traction? Is that taking off anywhere?
No, unfortunately not. I did watch the coverage. I was hoping so, but no, that is one of my main forms of attire is shorts and a hoodie. So I was hoping so.
It's not too late. I don't know. You know, I think, let's just put it out there now. Is that like an Under Armour or a Nike? Is there any particular, you know, outdoor apparel company that could then, of course, get branded with DGA and Great Lakes Disc? Is there any favorable sweatshirt company?
That's a good question. I don't know for sweatshirts because I usually just get them from, you know, either Great Lakes. So I don't even know what brand they are. I do like Adidas socks, so let's just stick with them.
Okay. So Adidas sweatshirts and socks. I don't know. Somebody out there is listening in, and let's get this guy hooked up.
Yeah. I've got nowhere to go with that.
That's all right. I was correct, though. You had three different sweatshirts for the three different rounds. Am I right on that?
Yeah. I wanted to wear, you know, one of my nice polos, but it was just a little bit too cold. By the time the last few holes of each round, you know, when it was getting close to dark almost, I was pretty much freezing. So I was glad I wore a hoodie at least.
It makes perfect sense. And I liked. How many sweatshirts do you have? That's the next question.
Maybe like 8 or something. I don't know. Rough guess.
All right. So you can go a whole week and then some with a different one. I like that play. So earlier when I asked about touring and where you're going, what's kind of the mechanism? Just a few weeks ago, we talked to James Conrad, who's redoing an entire bus. Everyone, we've seen everything from cars to vans to RVs to fifth wheels and everything in between. What's the strategy you're going with this year and why?
Yeah, I still got the same van, just a Ram ProMaster, but Lindsay and I are hoping to improve next year, getting a little bit longer of a van. You can't get too much taller. The high roofs are all the same pretty much, so a little more room would be more comfortable and nice, but yeah, we just got our cargo van that's, you know, all built out and nice and does the trick for us well.
And because how tall are you? You have different problems than I have.
I'm 6'5", so I have to hunch a little bit when I get in, but it's not too much. It's not too bad.
Okay.
Life of tall guys, let me tell you.
I can, you know.
You don't have to worry about that.
I just have small spaces to worry about, not necessarily tall spaces. It's a little bit different. A couple of weeks from now, you'll be at the Maricopa event, is that correct?
Yep, that'd be my first time going down there to play that event. So
I was going
to
say, kind of what are your next few weeks look like before you jump into Las Vegas and officially kick off the Pro Tour season?
Yeah, so you got an off week this weekend. So last couple of days, I've just been laying low, relaxing, trying to, you know, rest and whatnot. And then the week after that, like you said, it's Maricopa. And then I believe there's like a 2.5-week break until Vegas. After Maricopa, just more training for Vegas. I'm not sure how early we're going to be there, but hopefully more than a few days to really, you know, try to lock in on those courses to have a good start for the Pro Tour season / points and whatnot. But we were thinking about maybe staying around for a little bit longer before we head over there. We're not really sure. So I don't have too many plans, you know, in great detail yet, but there'll be a couple weeks at least of a break after Maricopa before Vegas.
Is there anything that you guys are both looking especially forward to this year on the tour, a place on or off the beaten path that maybe you want to hit up or visit or hike or take in or a show? I mean, anything. Is there anything across the country that you have on the bucket list?
Yeah, so I'd say there's a couple. I'll start with the first one is we've always really liked Vermont, so we're always super excited to go back to the East Coast, and especially Vermont is one of our favorite places to go. But the other one is we went to Big Bend National Park last year, which was, you know, a little bit out of the way of the the trek over to Texas, but it was such a huge park. We wanted to try to maybe visit a little bit more this year, but if time allows, it might not, but that was another destination we were thinking about doing.
Okay. Yeah. It's clearly it's no secret. Plenty of people have Vermont as a place where they wish we could spend more time. And then of course, having the World Championships taking place there this year, how much are you looking forward to the Worlds being at those two particular courses, and how do those suit your game?
I like it a lot more than Kansas, I'll just say that, but I'm pretty stoked for it to be in Vermont. You know, I've had some pretty hot rounds at both of those courses. Played well at the GMC a couple of years ago, and usually I always do at least good enough, but all it takes is one breakout weekend to, you know, make some moves, so I'm pretty excited.
Love it. What would you, I don't know how much you've thought about this, but what would you, you know, if we fast forwarded 1 year and you were reflecting on the 2023 season, what would you think you would have hoped to accomplish, or what's kind of like a benchmark for a good or a great season for you? Anything in particular?
Another putting title? Yeah. I mean, you seem to rack them up 92%, 91%, like you're almost unstoppable inside the circle.
Yeah. But yeah, what would be success to you?
Success, I think, you know, as much as I do take good pride in my putting, at the end of the day, you know, I could putt really well and still, you know, take 30th place or something like that. So I really think it comes down to having some top finishes, whether it be top 10 or top 5 or hopefully a win. But, you know, just trying to be more consistent to finish in, you know, the top 10, to be on the, you know, UDIS leaderboards and just stuff like that. So it would just be nice to be in contention more often than every once in a while. So I think consistency would be a big key.
Okay. I did not do a deep dive, but your first round this last weekend was rated 1082. I wouldn't think that is your highest ever. It's probably one of the higher ones, or do you know where that ranks for you?
Yeah, I think it's my second highest.
Okay. Wow. How does that feel? I mean, you said you play that course really well. Does that surprise you, or do you feel like that was just a day out at the park? Because it was actually the windiest of all the days. You shot the hottest score on the windiest day on the opening round.
Yeah, it was obviously it's unexpected because it was the first round of the season and not having too much practice before that. But it was kind of weird. Before I checked the ratings after the round was done, it felt like a good round, but I didn't really think it would be that high, you know, because that was, like I said, when I interviewed with you after the tournament is, you know, not having any circle two looks for a whole entire round is very strange for me, because usually my driving is good, but not great. So I'm just outside the circle. So I think the extra 10 feet closer to the basket on half of the holes makes a huge difference, because 100% circle one meant a lot more birdies, and the only bogey being, you know, a 2 meter penalty. Mm-hmm. It seemed to work out pretty well for me in the wind, staying, you know, OB free besides a 2 meter.
Yeah, it was. And then maybe one of my last questions about that before we cut you loose, going back to that first round, you shot 10 under, again, windiest conditions. It wasn't maybe the coldest day, but it was one of the chillier days, windiest conditions. And when you got done with the course, you were the first MPO card to go out, actually. And when it was all said and done, you had the entire field by 5 strokes. You had doubled the next best score. I think there were 4 or 5 guys tied at 5 under. What are you thinking on that first night when you put your head on your pillow and you just bested the field by 5 to open the tournament? What's going through your head at that point?
It was a weird feeling knowing that, you know, being ahead by so much after just one round, it was mostly a try not to blow it, you know, moment. So it's one of those things where you still have to be aggressive the next day, but also you have to play a little more smart, knowing you have a decent lead that you don't actually have to go for the ones that maybe you want beforehand. And if I wasn't in that position, so obviously you can't complain with being ahead by so much, but it changes your game plan a little bit. And luckily my putter stayed hot and tried to avoid the big mistakes. And as you guys know, it worked out pretty well. So I was super excited with this past weekend, and it's a really great start to this year.
Yeah, I would say so. I just the idea. I mean, you were against a really solid field with some great competitors, and to think you came in five clear of the next person and literally had doubled their score, you know, with 11 birdies and that single bogey. It just makes it, the more I think about it, the more impressive it really was, because no one was near you after that first round. And you held on, and you played, of course, very solid throughout. So, all right.
I was going to say real quick, one last question. How does it feel being kind of almost, I feel like you're almost the elder statesman now of the new young DGA team. I mean, you guys have, Noah Meinsma, you have even though he is kind of a tour veteran, you've got the lefty in I'm drawing a blank on his name.
Austin
Hanum. You have Austin Hanum, but I was saying Austin Turner.
And Austin Turner.
Yeah, but you have Austin Hanum and Austin
collecting
Turner.
Austins left and right.
I mean, you were one of the first guys to sign on to the quote, I guess we'd call it almost the new DGA touring team.
Yeah.
I mean, they had some guys, but you were kind of the first big one, you and Kat. So how does that feel to be kind of the head of the team?
Trailblazer.
Yeah, I guess so. We also picked up Cole Rodalin too, if I pronounce his last name.
Yeah, that's right, Cole.
Right.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, so we got some crushers this year. It's pretty sweet. But I still think of Shasta as being, you know, the guy for DGA. He's been around for a long time. So with me only being around for a year, happy to welcome the new guys in. Get them used to the ropes, maybe. I don't know, but it's nice to have a pretty solid, you know, complete team of some top guys. And as you guys saw with Noah this past weekend, taking second, shooting some fire rounds, that got a pretty complete squad, and hoping to show some guys what DJ Plastic's all about.
Yeah, it certainly was very impressive. I would love to, somebody get Statmando on it to find when we had two DGA guys take top two spots at an A tier of this size and caliber. And it's very impressive what you both did. So many great shots, like you said, by your teammate, in watching what Noah Meinsma was doing out there. And in a few days, I'm going to be watching Shasta on the other side of the world in Thailand throw some shots. And maybe I get to record another DGA win over there. Somebody put me on DGA's books, damn it. Give me that money. Anyway, you did the work. It was so incredible to watch. It was a lot of fun. I mean, you're very humble in how you walk and you carry yourself, and you just go out and get the work done. And I don't know how somebody can't be rooting for watching you do what you do. It's the perfection on the green, making use of all your tools in terms of getting yourself anywhere near a basket, and then always closing it out. It was a real pleasure to watch, and congratulations on this weekend.
Thank you. Appreciate that. Thanks for having me on.
Yeah. Last, before we let you go, then is final shout outs. No, this one's an easy one for you. We're lobbing this one up. Final shout outs, sponsors, anyone you want to thank, anything you want to say, or ways people can go out and additionally support you by whatever means or links or codes or whatever. Go ahead and shout those all out.
For sure. Yeah. Always got to thank the sponsors, of course, DGA, Great Lakes Disc, Squatch Disc Golf Bags, and then Mitten Bags. A good way to support me, as always, you know, buying the Tour Series when they come out. They'll be coming out about a month. They're just running some big sales after my win on DGA. If you want to buy some, Hurricanes and some Stone BLs, get the putters I putt with. It works out for me. Hopefully it works out for you. And then go check out Great Lakes Disc. They got some limited edition discs they just came out with. So anything DGA, you know, both those stores got it. So.
Awesome. All right. Well, Andrew, enjoy your time in Arizona. I hope it warms up just a little bit more while you're down there for the next few weeks. And then a few weeks after that, I'm going to see you out in Vegas, and looking forward to kicking off the 2023 Disc Golf Pro Tour season. You already got this nice A-tier win under your belt, and looking forward to more from you this season. So best of luck. Be safe, and we'll see you in Vegas.
Awesome. Thanks, guys.
Good night, Andrew. See ya. Our champion, Andrew Marweed, on the MPO side.
I know we've said it before on the podcast, drivers tend to sell discs. Like watching someone throw an awesome drive, like a crush plastic 400, 500 feet sells discs. But if you think about it, his putters should be flying off the shelves, because putting inside the circle is something almost we can all do physically.
Mm-hmm.
And as I stated, I think three straight years in the top of the putting league. I think
I run commercials on that, bro.
I know you
yeah,
do.
Yeah, it's amazing.
Someone was very impressive. Like, how does he do that? And then you went to one of his commercials. It was a great segue, Terry. I'm just thinking, like, those discs should be out of stock everywhere all the time, because if they work this well for Andrew, there's no reason they can't work for everybody.
Yeah.
And he's I'm sure some of it is practice, but I'm sure some of it's the disc.
I think it's all the disc.
Wow. You know, you're really gunning for that DJ cash, aren't you?
Yeah. Pay me.
Me. I'll just take like a stack of 10 of the of his putters. That's okay. All I, you know, I'm much cheaper than you, Terry. That's unsullied to ask for cash, but to ask for discs, that's different.
No, I think I could use a stack of those too. All right. I'm going to send, I think in a moment, once I get a few little housekeeping here, we will reach out to our next guest who's going to be joining us. Spoiler alert. She was able to squeak out a victory this weekend and performed quite well in her new home state, where she's been for a couple of years.
Yeah, new for like 7 years or something.
I know. I guess she's not from there anymore. Anyway, without further ado, we have our FPO champion from this weekend's action over there at the Shelly Sharp Memorial presented by Spinners on the Green. We're going to welcome in now Jennifer Allen. Hey, Jen, you probably have to click on a button.
To unmute.
On
there you go.
How about I just turn on my mic?
You could do that, too.
Dang.
Yeah, you know,
it's been a long day.
She's a professional. She hosts a podcast.
Yeah.
So
I've been on here all day long, too. So I keep turning it off after every time. So
that's a good practice. I always turn off Johnny V's mic, even when we're on. So
that's what I thought.
It's better that way. Welcome in. How are you doing tonight?
I'm good. How are you guys?
We're great. We're back. I'm back in Wisconsin, and you know, we're just a few weeks away from the rest of the official disc golf season to kick off. Are you ready?
I want more practice.
Did I see that you shot 2,000 rated rounds? How are you not ready?
I did. I wanted three.
Oh, all right. Geez.
Yeah, I know, because shooting 2,000 rated rounds on you know one of the elite series events will only get you probably top three, top
exactly.
You know.
Exactly. Wasn't good enough.
It wasn't good enough. That's what I like to hear.
All right. So we talked to Andrew about some of the changes this weekend.
Mm-hmm.
And it's been kind of an objective of the event and the course or the event staff with the course in terms of having a number of the tee pads have been altered throughout the last couple of years to have FPO tee pads. But then also this year, we saw them change up a few of the pars for the holes. And clearly, we all know at the end of the day, low score wins. In your case, a 23 stroke margin of victory is regardless of par. Either way, you won by 23, so it doesn't matter what pars are. But what to you strike you for the changes that were in play this week? Does it matter to you?
No, because like I said, I was still kind of a little bit irritated that I left strokes out there. And that was, I mean, watch the footage. I left strokes out there. But definitely some of the pars were very soft for us. It is kind of nice to see that, I guess, you know, the FPO and MPO scores were kind of close, you know. So that is nice, I guess, way to kind of design the course, maybe, that they could be played fairly closely on what we can accomplish. I did talk to Dan Ginley and a few others that I feel like definitely some of the pars were weak for us, but they were played by all female competitors.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, for an amateur novice player to, you know, play some of those really long holes as par fours would be very difficult, especially, you know, like hole seven to me felt a little soft as a par five.
Mm-hmm.
But if you consider, you know, an AM woman trying to play, it's probably about, I don't know, close to 500 foot hole, and then it was made an island. So, I mean, it makes sense why the pars were a little higher.
Mm-hmm.
But for an open player, some of them were a little soft.
Sure.
I think I counted, there was probably, you know, probably about 6 eagle attempts out there. The 2 eagles that I had on Sunday were literally drop-ins.
Sure.
So that makes it feel like it really, honestly, on day one, kind of changed my game plan. On hole 7, I bogeyed it on the first day, and I had a drop-in eagle on the last day. So, and it was just because I changed the way I was playing it, because they were like, oh, it's a par 5. And I was like, okay, I'll just pitch up and lay up and just get a tap in birdie, I guess. And it was not my play. My play is aggressive. And, unfortunately I changed up a little bit of my play because of the pars, and it cost me, you know, a stroke here or there, but,
which is funny to hear. For me to hear you say that, because the distances didn't change, and so the lowest score still wins. So it's funny. Right. It's interesting. Maybe interesting is a better word than funny.
A different mentality.
Yeah, it's a different. Mm-hmm. It's interesting though to have such a different mentality, because, like you said, hole 7 was the same hole as it was on round 1 as it was on round 3, but your frame of mind changed about it.
Yeah, I was tucked in. I've been attacking it and getting the easy 3 for the last couple of weeks practicing. But the first day, there was a small child kind of fishing with her dad. And I was, you know, a little hesitant to really push the water's edge on that drive. And so I was a little bit pinched off on the left side towards the tree. So my approach on that green is a big spike hyzer. And I didn't feel like I could get the height and the turn to get around that last Mando safely. But then after the fact, I decided I was an idiot because I could have thrown it straight out of bounds and went up to the drop zone and jump putted for my par. So next time I'll just throw it straight out of bounds and you can save your par. So there's a notes and easy how to play that hole for anyone else.
So just so everyone does know, in case you didn't see the coverage yet, on the MPO side, the FPO coverage is getting worked on as well. Hole 7, 17, and 18 out at the Vista course have been altered in the sense that there's actually an island green that surrounds those baskets. And hole 7 is after the very long walk that you take to get from 6 to 7. And it's part of the other side of the course, so to speak. And it's usually, it's about 650 feet, par 4, typically.
Is it that long?
Yeah, it's 650 or 660 or 680, something like that. And once you cross that second sidewalk that's out there, you have to land inside this island green, which is about a 10 meter in size. And it definitely made people contemplate, as you were just talking about your strategy, right? It mm-hmm. totally changes up. I think it changes up how you play 7 more than it does how you play 17 or 18. Because 17 Absolutely. And 18, you're trying to throw to those exact spots regardless, right?
Right. They're 280 feet.
Yeah.
So okay. Those are, that one, 17 was, I think it was only harder because a lot of the women that I practiced with or played with or whatever, you know, really kind of use that slide approach. That's such sure. a, if you're going at that basket with any kind of height, you're usually going to go OB left. And so it's not a bad play to land short and slide up towards that pin placement because of the slope of the green. But when there's a wall at circle's edge, that really kind of affected and made several of the women go out of bounds on that one or go to the drop zone.
Yeah, and 17, you know, I think some people may contemplate the forehand. They may not feel super comfortable with it, but because you can't play the skip, mm-hmm. it does right. bring a forehand play. I mean, if you get it anywhere on
which
there,
which is always
and
a
it
safe
rolls,
play.
Yeah, I was going to say, and if it happens to roll, that wall actually stops
saves
it.
You.
Yeah, it so and I think that's going to be an interesting question that will definitely come into play is, you know, the Pro Tour has really taken a specific approach to saying in almost every instance, I think, that the wall, a wall of that sort is not the defining line.
Right.
And this weekend, they played it as it really was. And it could it stopped you right at OB, so to speak. Mm-hmm. And I'll be interested to see if people like it one way or another, you know, if they feel strongly about it.
It was
clearly
definitely
it can save you strokes and it can give them away, right?
Yeah, right. Because on that green specifically, 17, you know, has always been that hole. Do you risk running the birdie putt or par putt or whichever? Because if you hit cage or even spit out, there's a high chance you're rolling out of bounds.
Exactly.
And so that did happen a couple of times where the roll was stopped by the wall. So if there was that meter in front of the wall of OB, which is, you know, for putting anyways, you want that space, that would have added a few more strokes to folks.
Yeah. Yeah, for sure. So it's I don't know that there's a wrong or a right way. I see pros and cons to both sides of it. Yeah. I just hope it doesn't create any confusion, just knowing if that's the rule they're going to play with at this particular event, which is not on the tour.
Right.
That or the everybody memorial.
That they understand that it's, you know, it's the walls themselves. Now, you talked about practice, but you know, you've been playing about the same amount of time as Johnny, although you play way more than we do. But you've been playing disc golf for quite some time. What is it going into this season that you really still want to get focused or dialed in on or just out there practicing? What in particular?
Definitely my putting. I'm a great putter. It's all just trusting that I am that great putter when I'm out there during the tournament, and I definitely left a few. It's just that hair, a bit of softness, and didn't help that, you know, half the baskets at Vista are elevated and it was windy. And, you know, so that always adds to it out there. And those baskets, I don't feel catch very well.
Really?
Yeah, I don't think so.
Really? Okay.
Not really?
Yeah. No, I mean, so that's your opinion. That's fine. Okay.
Yeah. So, but I just want to go out there just as confidently as I do in the backyard and hit all my putts like Andrew and everybody else.
Just think how grand life would be if you putted like, if we all putted like Andrew.
Like, no stress, like, just walk in the park.
Turn the whole sport into just a driving game. I mean, if you're,
it'd be so fun.
Coming from the world's furthest thrower.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez. It'd be awesome.
I don't want to put the stress on putting as much. So I've been working on dialing in up shots and getting my accuracy, you know, as close as possible on every distance that I need to, dialing in that little soft forehand. I use that quite a bit this weekend. Typically only with my, for some reason I can flick my Yeti putter so great. And so my Yeti goes 150 and that's max. My son convinced me to try the Cayman for like, I don't know, it was probably pushing like 190 approach and it didn't happen.
It's not really. I mean, the Cayman's more stable and a little bit faster, right, than a Yeti putter. So it's interesting that I would think if you just increase the stability a little, I mean, you could just put a little bit more on it.
Yeah. Okay. So I have the two pins in the elbow, and that's why I never did forehand because it hurts when I try to throw it hard.
Okay.
And so with the putter, I literally learned that I could do this because I tried way back in the day when everyone tried to learn how to do forehands. But I really realized that, hey, if I do it really softly, I can do it when I was teaching the schools. And so I have my whatever 115 Skeeters that I take into the schools, and I teach forehand, even though I don't do it much. I still teach the kids, and the Skeeter just flies. And so then I just kind of carry that over to the Yeti, and it just has a great glide. And it's turned into a really good just 150-foot approach shot. So trying to work that in more.
I was just going to say, whatever works, right? I mean, there's no wrong way to go about it. What does your season and your tour kind of look like, knowing that you obviously have been dabbling and performing well and winning and doing stuff in both divisions, both Masters and Open? What's kind of the game plan for this year? And are there any decisions getting tougher?
I've really struggled. This first big decision was skipping the Champions Cup. And I was kind of sad because I got that invite by winning the Australia Open or Championship. But it's the same weekend as the reunion at Masters Cup in at De La. And I want to play our tree bash here, the A-tier and Flagstaff, because that is a great practice for Masters Worlds. So I still wanted to play Santa Cruz, but it's the same weekend open as the tree bash. And so I just kind of had to finagle it into where I decided to skip the major, go play the champion or Masters Cup instead of the Champions Cup. And then that way I can play tree bash. And so that's one Masters event that I'm going to be playing instead of FBO.
Yeah. And I was just going to say that's where I feel like your heartstrings get pulled on, the people,
it does.
The
location. It's so hard.
You know, I mean, rather than traveling all the way across country. Yeah. I mean, you're staying on the West Coast.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay.
Kind of crazy to see what it looks like. There's so much damage. So I'm curious to see what the beaches look like in a month or so.
So
totally trashed right at the moment.
Yeah.
And along with that, I was just going to say, we had Callie McMorrin on a few weeks ago who talked about a Masters tour, which clearly is not in your game plan at this moment, but talk about a Masters tour existing and what does that mean, whether it's to you or to the sport?
I'm super excited for all of it. What she's doing, she's sticking her neck out there and working very hard. I wish the schedule lined up where I could support her more. I mean, she's clearly a great friend. Mm-hmm. So I would love to be out there her very first year, but unfortunately the tournaments just really didn't line up to where I could play many of her events. So I hope it, you know, has great success so that in a year or two, when I'm tired of playing with these young kids, that I can take Callie's tour.
Okay. Do you look at that as a viable professional living, or do you see that, I'm talking about the Masters Tour, do you see that as something that people may take to if they've already retired or are taking a sabbatical and have 6 or you know, 9 months off? Like how do you see that? I mean, is it practical as a professional?
I think it would go back to what I was doing before, being able to work, you know, healthcare and take off and go play some of the major events. So I would go back to working healthcare.
And that was going to be, I guess that's maybe my next question is, what is kind of your professional non-disc golf playing career? What's in the back of your mind, or what's the game plan for you?
For this year?
I'll say in general, 5-10 years.
I will probably more than likely go back into healthcare. I love what I do. I love helping patients. I'm really, really good at it. I'd have to say I'm not a very pretty humble person, but I think I'm a much better healthcare worker than I am a golfer. And so I love my job, but breaks are good. And COVID, definitely, I wanted a break from messing with that. And we got bought out by Medicare, and that was a disaster, or different and complicated, just in case Medicare is listening. So I wanted a break from that, and I wanted a last couple shots at really trying to give it my all and see where I can still hang with the FPO players, and then I'll move up to where I'm just mainly playing Masters events.
Okay. It's exciting to see the Masters division start to fill out and become that much more of a conversation piece week in and week out. And I, you know, again, all of us in the similar ish age range. And so we know a lot of these people, and a lot of these people we grew up with playing, competing against, and or, you know, they were tournament directors, but now are able to take different roles, whatever the case might be. It's just, I really like how the Masters Cup took on that, you know, that moniker of, you know, the reunion event that they're calling it.
And that's why I just couldn't miss that. I've always loved that, you know, homeschool kind of feeling, those great vibes when you get on those, you know, OG courses. And so, talking to Tom, I interviewed him for PDGA radio, it just, like, I knew I wanted to play it anyways. And then by the time I got done with that interview, I was like, Grant, I'm not going to see you in Georgia.
Makes perfect sense. Segue over to that. Of course, taking on, along with Grant Zellner, doing PDGA Radio, something you didn't necessarily see yourself. I think that's a fair statement.
No, I remember years ago, you hated. Like, hated being on the microphone.
Yeah, you ran hated being from in us. Front of,
we would be like, hey, Jen, you want to come out? You're like, eh, I don't think, you know, maybe not my thing.
We'd have to, like, trip you just to, to put a mic in front of your face then. Here you are.
Ours is easier, so I don't have to, like, look at myself or anything. Ours is radio only. And so I can talk. I just don't like whole video.
You can talk. I mean, Johnny's got a face for radio. How's it going? Like, here you
are.
How many episodes are in are you personally? Like, oof, how many
that's
of
a
you
Grant
guys?
Question. He's a numbers guy. We're into, you know, our second year. So we started January 1st last year.
Okay.
At first, we were doing an episode a week. And now, with all the travel, with him traveling so much more and doing that too, we're switching to every 2 weeks. We did that kind of towards the end of last year, I think, something like that. It was easier. We did longer episodes instead of, like, weekly short episodes. Mm-hmm. And so that's been fun. Works good. You get an interview. I love bringing back all of the older players or historians of the game, interviewing all of, you know, the greats and letting the new viewers, you know, get to hear a little bit of the history, because they don't know that, you know, they just know what they see right now. They know Paul and Ricky and all of the new, you know,
current
huge
superstars.
All the exciting stuff that's going on right now. But the history of our sport is so incredible.
Yeah. So I was just going to say, if you had to describe the podcast or give a plug for it, like, explain to everyone else, if you're giving the elevator pitch on the PDGA podcast, how do you describe it? I mean, some people listen to other podcasts besides ours, apparently. So how would
there's
you
time?
Describe? Yeah,
we take up a lot of time.
Yeah, we do. No, but how would you describe
ours
it?
Ours are much shorter. Okay. Ours are much shorter.
That's not
sell.
Saying much.
That's a great sell.
But no, we try to give a wide variety of interviewing. Like I said, you know, people who helped, you know, start this sport, to our huge stars right now, to, you know, we had Robert on going over the new rules. Like, it's just a wide variety. This next episode that's dropping on the 7th, we just interviewed David Wiggins and Albert Tomford, the U.S. distance competition that is going to be out in 2 days on Disc Golf Network and Disc Golf Pro Tour YouTube. And so, yeah. And so for them. but we just, you know, so if there's something exciting coming up, we try to maybe get them on, you know, to help promote that, or if something happened. But it's not so much where, you know, you guys are so great on, like, the right now, you know, what the action that happened just now, or, you know, what's going on in the current moment. Ours isn't always the current moment. We can try to be, but we just, you know, try to interview a variety of people. Like, we interviewed Kristen and Silver last year together. We just interviewed Paige and Grady. So we do, you know, sometimes can get a few couples on there. For Portland, we were able to interview Val and Nate and help kind of promote what they've done with the sport and what they're doing now. So it's just a wide variety.
And that's PDGA Radio. You can find it on any of the podcasting apps. Podcatcher, I'm a subscriber. I listen when... I do listen when I... when I look at... Terry, how you doing? Oh, he takes a drink.
That is one of my favorite podcasts. It definitely is.
When I look at some of the guests, I'm like, oh, this is one I really want to listen to. Otherwise, I get right to it. Sometimes they sit for a few days, but I really...
I don't blame you. I don't always listen to them immediately either, so it's no...
Well, you live to it. I barely want to listen to my own podcast. Gosh.
I have to sometimes go back and listen to make sure, like, how was that? You know, but...
Well, you guys...
all the editing, so
I was just gonna say, you guys
he makes
like
you sound smart
post produce stuff? Like, you like fix, you make mistakes?
Yes.
What are you talking about? Well, who's got time for
not
that?
Not always, but we get to cut out the ums and the okay, is there anything else you want to talk about? Like, he cleans all that up. Sometimes we're really good, and sometimes it's just like he doesn't have any work to do. But then there's times I feel like he needs to work harder, and so I'll try to screw up. And
it's a good idea.
Yeah, we got to make sure that money is spent in all the right places.
That's
exactly.
Right. These are your PDGA dues and going, you know?
Yes.
They're going to Grant Zellner editing ums.
Exactly. Yep.
So then that begs the question, is this just one little piece? Is this a start? Is this a...
Do you have media in your future?
Yeah.
I have enjoyed doing the commentary. I definitely jumped in. Grant and I did all, I don't know if we did all of the majors together, but we did, I think I helped him with all of the FPO or FPO 40 or AM. We did, I helped with the AM women's for their worlds. Mm-hmm. So I helped with the PDGA commentary, Ace Run Pro. Sometimes maybe Terry might have me on to commentate. I don't know. Mm-hmm.
Sometimes, maybe.
But, yeah, sometimes. But I have enjoyed that, actually. I was kind of shocked to really get into that side of it as well. So it's nice to know that if I can't play in 10 years, maybe I can still be out there doing something.
Certainly.
It's one of the nice things, especially getting to do your podcast every week. You get a lot of reps in front of the mic. It makes you more comfortable. Mm-hmm. You have a lot of experience like us. I'm not saying you're old, mm-hmm. saying you're like us. Nope. And we've been playing for a long time. And so you have a great perspective that a lot of younger people maybe don't have. So it's really nice to be able to focus that.
You know, we've all played our 20 plus years. Interviewing David today, it was really funny because he started, you know, I think he first threw when he was 4 and then he first played like junior worlds when he was 8. And then Grant was like, well, so you've been playing for a long time. Like, how old are you now? He's like 27. Mm-hmm. It's like, yeah. So you've been playing as long as I have, but yet you're 27. Oh, wow. So there's some people who've been playing 20 plus years and they're still young. Believe it or not, it's crazy.
I don't believe it.
I don't think that's the norm yet, but that's going to be in 20 years. That's very much going to be even more so the norm, where it's like, wait, you're only 32 and you know, you've been playing for 22 years or whatever. Yeah, that's becoming more and more common. Again, we were all pretty fortunate to find it in our
teens. And there's a lot of people our age that are now obviously with kids. You know, you've got teens, I've got teens. Jen, you've got teens and older.
All over.
Yeah, you have them all. And so we've been bringing kids out to the course, you know, and mm-hmm. at some point, some of those kids are going to love it. You know, maybe ours, you know, do or don't at times, but they're definitely going to love it and they're going to join in and they're going to play and they're going to be the future.
I'd love to give my son, he's not listening, but I'll give him a little plug today. It was really fun. He finally convinced a couple of his friends to go out and play today. I was a good mom and I stayed home and I let them go by themselves. I gave them some disc and he texts me. They are hooked for life because he got to throw in a 350-foot ace in front of him.
Wow, so that's a baller move.
A huge, huge ace in front of his friends on the very first time that they played with him. So that was super fun today. So yeah, one out of three kids is probably going to be good. In my house.
Yeah, there's well, and it can get to be overload. I know it's great when everybody plays in a family, but sometimes
that has to get.
I mean, if you're over there at the you know, the Schultz house, the Silas and Esther Schultz, like, and again, I think only about half of their kids play, and that's still like 20. So that's, I mean, that's some point, a lot of tournament entry fees.
Well, that on top of that, at some point, I'm sure those kids are like, I want to sneak out and play by myself. Yeah, just if I can maybe sneak away for a round and not have to play with my three siblings or whatever happens to.
Yeah.
So it's great that we're seeing this growth. It's you know, something that we all envisioned, you know, so many years ago. But to see where it's gone just in the last few years and the explosion, I love basking in the fact that we get to see this massive explosion mm-hmm. in our lifetime, just never knowing if it was going to come. And now we've had what we've had over the last few years. And clearly we have no idea where it's going to go yet. But
I know we could be looking at this in 20 years and being like, remember when we thought that was the big explosion? And or it could be in 20 years and be like, oh, that was great. Those were great times.
Yeah. But to know that we met who started this game.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, little things like that. It doesn't matter how big the sport is going to grow. Like, it's cool to know that we were kind of there when it all really, really started. And so we get to see the full picture. So I think that's really cool.
Yeah. You met Steady Ed, right? Yeah. We've all met Steady Ed. I've got discs signed. Terry's got discs signed and other things. Yep. And it's, you know, not many, you know, the future can't say that. How many people...
personal disc signed where he almost hit me in the head at AmWorlds. And so he was testing out, I think it might've been the X-Cal at Terry, you were there, right? AmWorlds in Kansas City, 99.
I was gonna say 99. Yep, we Johnny there. Was there. Mm-hmm. I was there. Yep.
Yep. So he was testing off that X-Cal at Swope Park and almost hit me in the head. We were warming up putting for the final nine. And so he signed it Duck Steady Ed.
Duck Steady Ed.
Get out of my way, kid.
Steady Ed throwing an X-Cal. That's so funny.
Not an X-Cal. XL.
XL. Right? Okay, XL. Yeah. XL makes more sense. I was like, wow, an X-Cal. Yeah. Like, that's a stable disc.
No.
That was a few years later, but yeah.
Yeah.
Either way, yeah.
Wrong company.
I mean, you never know what he's going to do. But
you know, I ask it all the time, especially here at the beginning of the season. But like, what's now on the bucket list? You and I have talked about where you haven't gotten to yet. And then what do you get to check off this year that you're planning on in terms of your travels and experiences or courses on or off the course? What's kind of on your list?
I really wanted to go to Japan. Like, we've been wanting to go over there. I have every disc that they sold at Las Vegas for fundraisers. Mm-hmm. Like, it's just, gosh, the schedule is so busy. Like, it's impossible and it never fails. Like, same thing. I won't be going over to Europe again this year. And like, I have the best, you know, tour guides around with Henna and Evelina to take me over there. But, both years, last year and this year, either right before, days after is a Masters World Championship or one of our other majors. And so it's just impossible. I even wanted to really try to go back to Kansas City. I haven't played there in years, but it's right before Masters Worlds. And so, you know, you really can't even play a tournament the weekend before, but if you're doing doubles or distance or anything else, because they start that weekend. Mm-hmm. So it really, World Championship takes, you know, 2 weekends. So that took out Rochester. I was kind of wanting to play Rochester Open right before Vermont. But it's silly. It's impossible. So there's still a few out there that I want to go back and play one day.
Yeah, there's no way at this point in our careers you can play every event you want to. It's it's almost impossible if you truly want to hit and be relevant on the pro tour to be able to hit all these other fun events or ones that are close to you. You have to be picky. You have to pick and choose these days.
Yeah. And there's always a couple of good ones every weekend. So it definitely makes it difficult to pick and choose.
Yeah. And I think to, go on that point of the Japan Open, which I think it does hurt a little bit that there's not a PDGA sanctioning necessarily attached to it. I think that although it's this incredible cultural experience and
it looks incredible.
Yeah. And this lifetime experience and Innova and the rest of the crew are going to do this amazing job with it when there's no tie to, you know, any kind of PDGA recognition and I guess that's a compliment.
Yeah,
that's a compliment to the PDGA and to the that there is that value that feels like it should be attached. I mean, for many years it's been considered a major and they just have a different philosophy with it, which I also can embrace and understand, but it's too bad that I don't think enough of our top level players will go make an experience of it.
I think it would either have to be a major or on the tour in order to get people to go there.
I agree.
Not even an A tier. I think you could make it a the greatest A tier, and it's still not going to draw people away from the current tour and majors. It's so tough.
I just think if it was a free weekend, you know, if it wasn't so packed, I would go without the sanctioning in a heartbeat. Because I want to go for the experience. I'm not going for the money. I'm not going. I mean, even going over to Australia or Thailand, you know, Terry, like, we're not going for the payoff.
Yeah.
Like, There was no way. I don't even think my payout in Australia could have paid for like the taxis or whatever. You know what I mean? Like, it's just, yeah. You're not going to those countries to make money. You're going for the experience, and to meet new people and to see how disc golf is played in other countries. I'm sure European Open is a little bit different. Clearly, mm-hmm. it's gone to that professional level. But if you're looking at any of those other countries, I think it's strictly for the experience.
Yeah, it is. And I feel like, again, back in 2008 and 2010, when I had gone to Japan Open.
It was a lot of fun.
Yeah, you were so much about, hey, we're playing this in another country, which at the time was so much more, you know, pardon the pun, more of even a foreign concept, just simply because it wasn't economical, you know, right. from a business perspective, and you went for the experience. But now traveling internationally is, you know, and that's another subject on our show tonight, is just the fact that we're seeing like tours, we're seeing coverage, we're seeing mm-hmm. a viable, you know, realistic, you know, traipsing around of Europe next year or this yeah. year. And that's going to be incredible. So we've
and
come a long way.
All of them over here. I mean, like it's, yeah. there's definitely, it's, I feel like we're about to get to another level on complete international play.
For
you
sure.
know, world championships will be world championships pretty soon.
Yeah. And is there, you spoke of Evelina and Henna a little while ago. Is it just, do you assume with your conversations with them and your friendship with them that them coming here for 3 and 4 month stints is just going to become the norm for them? Are they essentially going to be here all the time every year?
I don't want to speak for them, but mm-hmm. I would think yes. I think you can stay 3 months. Is that correct? And then you have to go back, and you have to go back for just a day.
Yep.
You have to go back, and then you can come right back. So I'm sure most all of them will be doing 2-3, you know, different little tours back over here. They, I'm sure, will all be going back to play the, you know, most of that big track of the European tour, and then be right back here to finish it up in the US.
Yeah, which is just incredible that we have, like we're saying, this
opportunity.
Even the notion and the opportunity and the arrangement and the scheduling and the timing and the financial viability of it all. Like that yeah. was all yeah. almost crazy. I mean, I ran into Albert, who you said you had just interviewed, but talking to Albert Tom this weekend, he had just landed within the last few days or so. He's in Arizona, and he said, yeah, I just want to be here to practice. It's much warmer weather here. It's gorgeous here. I have an RV.
But not really.
Well,
oh, boo-hoo.
Yeah,
Stop it,
he would
Arizona
still take
girl.
55.
45.
Yeah, he'd still take 55 over zero.
That's true.
But just the fact that, I mean, he's got an RV here. mm-hmm. To be here and then take on, and he just said that makes the most sense. I know where I'm going to sleep every night. I've got my touring scheduled. Yeah. Like that is just sounded crazy to all of us 10 years ago.
Five
and he's
years
not
ago,
the only one. Yeah.
No, I mean, and for Henna and Evelina, well, and Kristen and Silver talked about it too. Their greatest expense is renting a car.
Yeah.
And it's like, if there's any way we could figure out how to get them an insurance over here, it'd be cheaper to buy a car and sell it at the end of the year.
Yeah.
So I think there will be, you know, whether, and I don't know how all that works. I know Simon, you know, was able to, before he moved here, he was able to get that special, you know, athlete visa, mm-hmm. which extended his stay. So I don't know if more of them will be able to start getting that, if that will open up where they can purchase or keep things over here or have insurance where they can do that instead of having to rent cars. I think a lot of that, hopefully the kinks will get worked out and be a lot easier on all of them.
Yeah, it's amazing that a lot of people don't even take that into account when they think of the tour life. Like, you're yeah. renting a car for yeah. like, for 5 months.
It's expensive.
Yeah.
I mean, it's expensive.
Yeah. I can only imagine how many thousands of dollars that's going, that is just
multiple.
To be able, yeah, obviously just to be able to get back and forth. Cause you're right. It would be mm-hmm. better for somebody locally to buy a car and then, you know, loan yeah. it out to them or something along those lines. But again, then that takes insurance and all these other mm-hmm. things that you need to take into account.
Yep.
I'm smelling a business plan here somewhere.
We need more Europeans to come over before we make this a business. Well, otherwise, you're just literally taking advantage of like two poor girls.
I'm just saying that, with the more people that are coming over, the way that
insurance
it
company
done.
Needs to. Yeah.
Huh. Do we know anyone that's related to the PDGA that does insurance?
Huh. Almost like there used to be a major event in the Midwest here with an insurance backer.
Yeah, or somebody that sits on the PDGA board that knows about insurance.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, you've got those connections to the PDGA.
Heinold, I want a commission of all of this. That's what I'm saying. I need a commission on all this, Nate Heinold. Yeah. Oh, I mean, this could be a PDGA, like a PDGA Europe or just a PDGA
perk?
Member perk of some sort. Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Program. I don't know. Program.
That's right.
I'm an idea man. I just don't do it. Anyway, real quick, I do want to have a conversation irked isn't the right word, but I'm looking for personally, this is a little self-serving, on assistance with, we need more coverage, B, we need more FPO coverage, and C, I can't do it all. So here's what I really do want to say, and I'm genuinely looking for feedback in that there's times like this past weekend where I'm essentially taking on the coverage of the MPO action, and through just a blind, I'll call it a blind faith or a roll of the dice is maybe a better word. No, it's not even that. It's not even that positive. Anyway, I gather a couple other guys, take a chance on getting some additional coverage and some footage, and then go out and we film FPO, which I love the idea. Of course, we've filmed a ton of FPO. I think part of the disconnect or the challenge comes in. Here's where I need your help. How do we get more people involved, and how can we lower expectations on someone like myself is a smaller crew and can't possibly turn around all coverage instantly that I'm not even really responsible for? Like, how can I call these people off me and get them to back off?
So you say, hey, guess what? We have all this extra footage because this awesome college kid donated his time, and I'm going to get to that and give it to you. And it's going to be amazing as soon as I can.
But he didn't. He didn't even donate his time. I paid him. I paid him out of my own pocket.
Oh,
yeah. So okay, I didn't know that. I've taken that on, which I'm okay
with
doing.
Have you watched it yet?
Yeah. I'm mostly through round one, which he in this case is graciously. His name is Tyler. He had reached out to me through Instagram, and then we started talking about stuff. And I said, well, I'm gonna take a chance on you being a good cameraman. Yeah. He is just that. I'm editing his first round, and he admitted this is the first ever round of golf he's filmed, and he admitted to being a little bit nervous and working out a few details, and so far it's been great. And again, we're in round one. He said he felt he even got better in rounds two and three. All totally understandable. My very selfish challenge is the idea that I sometimes get challenged or chastised because the FPO coverage isn't out yet, or maybe it doesn't even exist in some events. How do we fix all of that?
You can't, Terry. You cannot do all of it. We cannot be in two places at once. You cannot do more than you can do. So we just have to be thankful. People have to be grateful and thankful that you are doing that, and we're going to get it when you get it done. And we should appreciate that. It's just the way the world is. No.
And I'm not looking, I'm not looking for a pat on the back. I appreciate the kind words, but like what's the next solution to others? Like, no one would have argued if somebody showed up and said, hey, we'll cover FPO this weekend. I don't think anyone would have argued with that.
No.
But we don't have those people beating down that door either. So,
because I don't know personally, but Terry, is it a huge money-making deal? Like, I think
no.
Exactly.
It's a big money-losing deal.
Yeah. So until the sport continues to grow, like, we should be very grateful for what we get, I think. But I've been around here for a little bit and we're a little more mature audience.
Of course, I want the coverage. The rest of the world wants the coverage, so on and so forth. There's just literally both a time and money component to it.
Yeah.
That there's no one entity that can fully solve it and be solvent, be profitable, be practical about it.
Right.
And
right.
So I'm generically asking for some form of, well, A, an answer, but B, some kind of call out or plea for others. Because the opportunities are there. And we know Ace Run, who's often on the board, mm-hmm. Ace Run has been through this grind. GK Pro has been through this grind. Mm-hmm. I've been through this grind. We need more people out there willing and able to take on these efforts. And
Do you think that if the sport continues to grow just a little bit more, you will get more college kids like Tyler, more school projects that these, you know, you get to these towns and you guys could reach out to the colleges and be like, hey, who needs, you know, extra credit or, you know, and can they edit? You know, do you trust? But that's the thing. Do you trust some college kid to edit it like you would if they don't know what disc golf is?
Yeah, I think if you're not a disc golfer, I think you're in big trouble there.
If you're not a disc golfer and you haven't watched coverage. Certainly.
Yeah, I think that's a pretty tall task. I like that idea. In the right cities, in the right towns, that might be relatively viable. I mean, Grant Draper on the board says, I'm a videographer. I'd love to travel and film disc golf, a literal dream, but I have a family to take care of. I would quit.
Yeah, and like, it just that's part doesn't of the, pay the bills.
Yeah, it absolutely doesn't. And so, you know, I don't think it's a lack of people having the desire, but there's a practicality of it. And that's what I think is one of the biggest challenges. So, anyway, it's something. And
we need
to
get more sponsors, Terry, more sponsors. What can we do for more sponsors?
The problem is, obviously, as everyone knows, the sponsors are being tapped out because they're covering what gets the most eyeballs, which is right now the Pro Tour, the silver events. So it's a lot harder now, I feel like, to get probably significant sponsorship for some of your, even your bigger A tiers. Now that's just not where the eyeballs are. And that's not where the quote unquote smart money is these days. It really is a problem that I don't know if it's going to be solvable, because even up until, I don't know about last year, but FPO coverage on the Pro Tour isn't always profitable. I mean, I've talked to the guys at GK and they, you know, they get through with, and because of some of the extracurriculars that they do on their channel, FPO coverage a lot of times doesn't pay the bills for them. And, you know, you've got MPO coverage, which will get 100,000 or 150,000 views or 200 or 250,000. We're looking at the FPO coverage and it's still only getting sometimes 20,000, 40,000, 50,000 views. And that's just not, as we know, enough to.
So what do we need to do? Do we need to like do a little like side dance or
no, I think just
a little to get some more.
It's getting better. I mean, it's getting better in that the better the FPO field gets, the more interest it will bring. Just like we saw with the MPO, like again, five or 6 years ago, MPO coverage wasn't paying the bills.
Right. Now look at the growth in the number of women who are playing now. So I think we'll catch up there. And I was talking to Patty Robinson from Australia today, and we were talking about how, you know, they think it's so cool that we can actually have this as a career. But in Australia, clearly the game is not that big yet. And so everyone over there still works and plays like we used to, you know, 10 years ago, whatever, you know, however long you want to throw it back. But, you know, he was saying too, like, we hope that, you know, as we watch America, you know, the sport grow and, you know, all the incredible changes, that they hope that they will continue to follow in our footsteps and have the growth over there in their country as well. And so I think it's would probably be the same way as the number of women who continue to grow, there's going to be more women who hopefully want to watch women's coverage. And so hopefully that will continue to grow. And you just have that little bit of a lag until all that catches up. But I think we need a lot more sponsors, clearly, to cover it. And Terry, how many tournaments used to get covered? Worlds, major, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
And so, like you were saying, like, there's people want coverage every week. Now, every big tournament, they want coverage.
Next day coverage.
Yeah. And so, like you said, sponsors aren't going to be paying weekly. They used to only have to pay maybe four times a year. So your pockets are getting emptied very frequently to get that coverage out there. And it is sad because people expect it, like you said. So,
yeah. And I do want to be very crystal clear. Like, I love my job. I love what I do. I love going to all sorts of events and to have the experiences and the people and the locals, the golf, the non-golf. Like, I am not complaining about the job or the people that view it. I just, there also has to be a little bit of a, there's just a little bit of a, we have to recognize that.
Realism.
Yeah, just a practicality to it all. And, you know, and maybe I took a comment to heart a little too hard today that I got on my Facebook that just said, hey, you know, like, and it could have been, and it, I think it was innocently asked as to, you know, well, why isn't there FPO coverage or why wasn't it MPO and then FPO or whatever? And it was, you know, I mean, there's only so many hours in a day. And when funding is not just pouring out of the sky to have a team 5 or 10 or 20 deep, that's why there's your answer. And until that happens, I just I think people I don't want to say
can
just,
you respond
we'll be,
one man show
that's what
hashtag
I think
one man show.
That's pretty much what I said. And I said I work a lot of hours in the
where's
day
your,
and,
where's yeah. your donation and I'll get right on it.
So it's and again I'm not lashing out at anyone or trying to, you know, complain. I'm crying out for a solution that hopefully we can arrive at some more ideas for how things like that can happen.
Yeah.
Because otherwise it's a little bit overbearing. So there's a bit much. All right.
We need more Terrys.
Nobody said that ever. I don't know if that's the right idea.
I've never said that in my life. I've known him for 30 years.
I don't recommend
never
that,
once
but
said that.
There needs to be other solutions.
Come on.
So, Carney out on the board says, I want more AM coverage. Go capture it, Carney. Get it.
Along with the Masters coverage and junior coverage. They're the future.
They're the future of our sport. The Masters, those are our pioneers.
Ending.
Those are our pioneers of the sport. The legends, I mean, they're showing that the senior Sandersons are a viable entity too. Like, we can make an argument for literally every age, you know, and they might be valid arguments. And
they all are.
And I will say to every person that feels so passionate about it, you're welcome
get
to go
camera.
Make it happen. Yep.
Yeah.
And I do mean camera. That with sincerity.
Yeah. No one's like, stopping anybody.
Yeah. I picked up a camera, started a channel. You can do it too. More today than ever.
The other day we reached out and we said, hey, you know, we want to get more women's perspectives on podcasts. If there's anyone out there that's, you know, wants to do a podcast, that's a woman from your perspective, reach out to us. And we had someone reach out and she's like, well, you know, I do podcasts pretty much during the off season. And then I kind of shut it down and I spin back up and this and that. She's like, how did you guys get your network the way you did? And I'm like, network? I'm like, literally, it's Terry and I. We picked up a mic 8 years ago. Like, that's all we did. And she's like, really? You guys like sound like you have it like so together. It's like, well, thank you, first of all. But no, literally just anybody can do it. Nobody, there's zero barriers these days.
Yeah,
so
get after it. All right. Well, we're going to let you get after it. Thank you for joining. But before we let you go, since we'll be seeing you a ton this year and we're looking forward to it, give some shout outs, plugs. How can people support you? Where do they need to go find your stuff or promo codes to use? Give us the spiel.
Continued thanks to Innova Disc, and hopefully some more incredible tour series will be out that everyone can purchase throughout the year. Hopefully we'll have two of those again this year, and I plan on keeping the exact same ones. We all love my T-Bird, which is absolutely amazing. And then Innova was great enough to give us a second disc, which I had the Halo Rock 3, which both discs were absolutely flew perfectly for me. So I hope to get the exact same, you know, where they come out just exactly the same. Like, what do you want to tweak this year? Absolutely nothing. Don't touch it. Just make it exactly the same. So I hope to get those that you guys can get out and support me with. You can follow me, Jennifer15354. On Instagram. And then hopefully I'm going to make a few things to sell throughout the year, do a little bit more. Hopefully we'll see.
You got any exclusive, give us an exclusive hint here. What are you working on?
Well, I was going to say also, thank you, Zuka, who you can also purchase my Zuka cart if you want a beautiful, bright Arizona sky kind of native theme bag. I absolutely love it. And there might be something a little bit more with that coming. And then thank you, Grip, as well. So when I have to fly, the Grip bag is the only way to go for me. And yeah, hopefully it's some merchandise this year. I made my own stamp that I sold and took out with me last year on the road here and there. And so I plan on making another stamp or two.
Are we going to continue to see you on the Zuka commercials and the giant Zuka trusts? Do we get a giant Jen Allen all year again?
Maybe.
Oh, I hope so. all right.
Yay. I may have a friend on there.
Oh,
this time.
Okay.
I don't know how they're going to do it, but there might be more than one or two.
Okay. I can't wait to see.
Who do you think it is, Terry? Come on. Good guess. I'm not going to answer, but you can guess. It shouldn't be a hard guess.
Andrew Zimmern.
I don't know if that's a spoiler alert, though. I don't know if Zuka would get mad if I. So, but yeah, there might be a few of us this year.
Few cool. Trusses, maybe.
So.
Wow.
Yeah.
I don't trust that. All right, Jen, keep doing great things. It's awesome seeing you out there. Congratulations on the incredible performance this weekend, and looking forward to you dabbling still in your FPO or I'm sorry FP40 yeah. action, as well as the MPO or the wow. I could almost spit this out.
All of it. I might play MPO. I might play MPO 40.
There you go.
Who knows?
Yeah, you can hang. We'll absolutely.
Mm-hmm. I've done it once.
Whatever division you play in, we're looking forward to seeing it. Congrats again on this weekend. Thanks for joining us. Thanks for doing the work over there at the PDGA Media, keeping Grant Zellner in line. And we'll see you in a few weeks.
No one has to.
Exactly.
We won't edit this at all, I promise.
No.
See you later, Jen.
Thank you, guys.
See
Bye.
Ya. Bye. All right, everyone. Jen Allen.
They edit their stuff, Terry. Why don't you do that for us?
Because I don't make mistakes. I almost said that. No, I didn't.
What division is she playing?
She can play wherever she wants.
She can.
Like, I'm not going to discriminate. She can play wherever she wants. All right, Nate. Have a good night. Thanks for joining us. So we're going to have another guest, and it very, very FPO-centric, in fact, because she's going to be, well... I should say all women's divisions centric or focused. We're going to have Chrissy Fountain in a little while. I guess the question is, do we have her headline our after show, in a sense, or do we keep rolling? I think we have her headline the after show, technically.
That sounds good. We can do that.
Yeah.
It'll force people to tune into the after show.
Oh, yeah, it will. And then my next question is there anything else we want to hammer on or talk about or discuss here in the regular show?
Yeah, we've got discussion points, Terry Miller.
All right, so let's get to that then.
First and foremost, let's get the big news out of the way. The DGPT announced, or DGN, depending on how you want to look at it, that they're going to be covering 7 additional events from the European tour, the Euro tour. Now, I know this can be a little confusing because Europe, much like the U.S. a couple years ago, they have 2 different tours. They've got the EPT, which is the European Pro Tour, and they've got the ET, which is the Euro Tour. The Euro Tour is the PDGA-backed tour, and the EPT is kind of like what the DGPT was like 5 years ago. Mm. So you've kind of got two, I don't want to call them competing, but they are. Whether you like it or not, they're competing tours. And I would say that unlike what we were doing here. They don't necessarily coordinate as well as the DGPT and the national tour did. So there's going to be some overlap. I think there's three or four events, maybe two, three or four events that actually overlap between the EPT and the ET. I know it gets very confusing with all the acronyms and whatnot.
Where do I get to buy a euro?
A euro over at Oakland Euros.
Okay.
Yes. Euro. That's a gyro.
Oh.
So
MVP sponsors this?
Oh man. God, confusing me, Terry. No. So DGN is going to be covering seven events. I think two of them are going to be done by the regular crew. So us, I believe that's probably going to, I'm certain it's going to be the PCS event. And there should be one more.
European Open?
Well, no, that one that doesn't count. We were going to cover that one. There's one more European tour event that was going to come. Maybe it's the Island. The other ones are going to be covered by a third party, which I'm drawing a blank on the name right now.
Okay.
But with the assistance of the Disc Golf Network. So I know there was some comments from the Europeans about the quality of this third party company in the past. And I can assure you from some talks that I've had and listening to Jeff talk about this, that they're going to be working with us. So they're going to have the Disc Golf Pro Tour graphics. They're going to be kind of doing that whole thing. And you're going to have simultaneous broadcasts between the EPT, the ET, and maybe even the Disc Golf Network, the DGPT, on same weekends. It's going to be, there is no excuse if you want to watch disc golf this summer.
Like there, plenty of options.
Plenty of options. What does this mean for a lot of different things? That's a great question that I just asked out loud to myself. Mm-hmm. This could, in theory, in the long run, this could hurt the European Pro Tour. We know that, as we were just talking, sponsorship is not an infinite pit. Mm. There is a limit. So if the PDGA and the DGPT are really pushing the Euro Tour, pushing those purses and advertising up, that could affect the EPT and Disc Golf Stream, who I am a supporter of, and I have a subscription to Disc Golf Stream. I've talked with Juha, and I've helped him out. We've chatted back and forth. Great guy. I don't know what's going to happen. I know Jeff had said that as always, they want to try to collaborate, but ultimately the DGPT and the DGN is the official pro tour of the PDGA, regardless of where in the world it is. So if there's a Southeast Asian tour that springs up, the PDGA in theory can go there, start a new tour, and DGN has that. Has access to that. They are the official. They have rights to every official PDGA tour. So if there is a South American tour, if there's an African tour, if there's a Russian tour, whatever that is, DGPT has rights to cover that first and foremost. So that's kind of out there, as Jeff had said today. I hope for the best, because I know the guys at Disc Golf Stream are killing it, but I also know that they have got a lot of improvements they need to do as well. We've all probably hopefully watched some of the videos, and we're going to see what this means. What does this mean for Disc Golf Network subscribers? More videos, more coverage. I don't know all the details. I'm not involved, I don't think, in any of the broadcasts, thankfully. Hallelujah. But I'm excited to see what this can do for European disc golf in general. It gives them more options. Hopefully the best of the best will survive, and maybe we'll see a consolidation at some point. Maybe we won't. I don't know. Terry, do you have any thoughts on any of this?
I mean, just in hearing all that, it's understandable how some people are somewhat confused as to what's going to be offered and what it's all going to mean in the big picture, because of all these different tours and tour names and, particular either access and or rights to these different things. I haven't fully digested it all. I saw the release myself. Some people ask, what we know about it or what we thought about it. There was maybe a tiny rumbling. Well, I don't even want to say rumbling that we knew of. There was stuff that we had somewhat murmurs, I think is the word.
There were some murmurs. And in, I'll say this. This has been in the plans for months, probably since last year. Our spreadsheet that shows all of the different assignments and who's doing what and what weekends has had these European tour events, the Euro tour events, listed in it since like November. Mm-hmm. When that spreadsheet was given to you and I, those were in there. So this was, I personally thought they were for a long time that they were just filler, just to kind of get an idea of what's going on, because they were always blank, but now they're filled in.
Yeah. You know, as others have said too, anyone that's not in the U.S. that wants to consume disc golf, it certainly is going to appease them and their time zones that much better, mm-hmm. probably. I mean, think about everyone else that this will now probably be within one or two time zones, you know, of where they are. I think of someone like Luke Butch, who earlier said today, you know, he's happy with all of this as someone who's in Thailand, knowing that the time zones are that much more closely related as opposed to being the 6, 8, or 10 hour difference for everyone else here in the U.S. So from that perspective, I think there's going to be a lot of things that make a lot of sense. And then you just talk about just the overall energy and efforts that are going to be put on by all of these. It's no secret. You're going to add this many more moving parts, this many more entities and components. You know, I think about the years that it's taken to get things to be a solid product, and now you're adding in this additional international component to all of it. I mean, you have to test it, you have to do it, but mm-hmm. yeah, it's a massive undertaking. So I'm definitely excited to see how it's going to play out, what it's going to mean. Clearly, we're going to be introduced to so many more players, so many more courses, and like you said, I mean, ultimately, there's going to be no shortage of disc golf to watch.
You're not going to be able to watch it all.
Yeah, there's just no way.
You're going to have to, I mean, it's going to help. And this is where kind of the conspiracy and the dark side of the story comes in. It's going to help to have Paul over there, because if Paul's at some of these events, it's yeah. going to get viewership. We all know he draws eyeballs no matter what he does or where he is. There was some talks earlier about whether or not Paul had premature information about this, which he did not. There were talks about whether or not they did this because of Paul. They did not. But it's funny timing that, you know, Paul announces a Euro tour, even though I know he wanted to do some last year, and then suddenly the pro tour says, oh yeah, yeah, we're going to be there too.
Yeah, but
it's a coincidence. I understand.
My main rebuttal to that be, what would be the right time?
Well, here's, right.
Was there any time where he makes an announcement? Because if they make it the same day, mm-hmm. that's going to look, you know, like it's a collaboration. Yeah. And if they said it and then he goes over there, you know, some people could then look differently upon it. Like, in my opinion, with the effort of him consciously saying, I'm going to go there and spend so much time there, no matter when the Pro Tour or the Disc Golf Network says, hey, we're doing something there as well, no matter how you announce that, there's going to be some assumptions that are made.
Yeah, but, and I talked to Mo a little bit about this, as far as my perspective was, I'm all for the coverage. I think it's going to be phenomenal to have more eyeballs on the European players and continent. Did they need to give them points? Because ultimately, I don't think these points are really going to matter too much. They're going to help out for tour cards that they're going to get. That,
sure.
that does help out quite a bit. But this late in the season, announcing an entire tour of additional points. I know there were some pros that had said, like, man, I wish I would have known about this. I don't know what they would have done any differently at this point.
Sure.
Or what they can't still do differently. I mean, these things aren't going on for months and months. And
yeah.
I think there's only one or two of them that are full. I think that just the maybe the Pro Forester, it might be full.
Possibly over.
And one other one maybe. So there's that. I just personally don't like the precedent of making these changes so close to when the tour is. And talking to Mo was like, yes, 100%. I really wish that we could have made these announcements last year. Mm. But these things also take time. And yeah. I mean, if it were up to me and up to Mo and everyone else, everything would be announced a year ahead of time just to avoid these things. But unfortunately, that's not the world we live in. It's very difficult to coordinate some of this stuff. And sometimes things fall in your lap. I don't know all the details about what's going on over in Europe, but it's quite possible that something just came together, quote unquote, at the last minute, or finally they've been waiting on things to announce. Maybe they wanted to make this announcement 3 months ago, 4 months ago, and they just couldn't. So I don't necessarily think points are required on these, and I wouldn't have been opposed if they would have said, hey, we're going to broadcast these, but you know, they're not going to get whatever. But these are just going to be silver events, basically. They're silver events. They can only count X amount of them. They're only going to count for 50% of your tour points, and same as what's going on over here. So that's kind of the big Euro news, and there's a lot to still unpack, and we're going to find out a lot more over the next probably month or so before the actual tour starts. Either way, I'm happy it's happening. I think it's going to be good for the sport.
All I really care about is it possible that I can screw up commentary and hosting in another language? And I think the answer is maybe.
Well,
I think the answer is yes.
The answer is yes.
I can.
The answer is yes if it involves another language, because as far as I know, you don't speak another language.
I don't.
So then the answer is definitely yes.
But I'm saying, no matter where it is in the world, I can go make mistakes, and that excites me.
That does excite me. I don't know, as far as commentary teams, what's going to happen, what language it's going to be in, if it's going to be
in a native language.
In a native language, because again, these are happening in like six different countries, so pick a native language, or if they're all going to be in English. Most of the time, these people, the Europeans, will understand English, so that's kind of the common denominator. My guess is that you're going to hear English speaking commentary as opposed to whatever the native language is.
Yeah. I'm not going to rule out anything, only because of what I saw taking place at the European Open this
Correct.
Year.
Correct.
There
have
was a separate stream. See, I can't even do it in English. There was a separate stream that then was also being commentated in Finnish. So I'm guessing something like that has at least been discussed. I don't know if it's going to come to fruition, but I would be shocked if there wasn't a second commentary team providing some type of stream in the event's native language. That's just, what do I know though?
Well, I mean, I know that stream didn't get a lot of views, but
that could also be demographic.
That could be poor advertising about that stream. There are a lot of things about that that could have led to that, and I don't know all those details because I don't care about those details behind the scenes. So, but ultimately, we're gonna see.
All right. Well, I think that's most of the news that we saw this last week. Of course, we had the big events taking place. I didn't even get to it, so I will quickly read off. Because here at Smashbox, A tiers are our top concern. It's a whole other conversation.
Oh my God, no.
For the after show. It's not. We'll talk about that later. But I do want to quickly read off our other top performers of this weekend when I had the pleasure to be out there in Arizona. So Andrew Marweed, of course, your champion. Noah Meinsma of Team DGA, a fellow Team DGA teammate of his, took second. Jake Brown, who's a whole nother story, all in a positive way, of course, but a pleasure meeting Jake Brown this weekend. That guy has a bright future ahead of him and has only been playing 3 years. He's only been playing 3 years. He's 20 years old, and here he is beating the likes of Gibson, Hamas, Gossage, Barella, Filimahala, Kale Laviska, Luke Sampson. Those were the next nine or so people behind him, and this kid's been throwing a disc for 3 years.
That's not bad.
And he's got a baseball background, so
it seems that's a very common background for a lot of our big throwers, is a baseball background.
So those were your top performers this weekend. Congratulations to them on the MPO side. And on the FPO side, we talked with our champion, Jennifer Allen. We also saw Maria Oliva's very first tournament with her new sponsors that will be releasing soon. Maria Oliva in second, Sarah Isaac in third, and Michelle Sagboy in fourth, tying local Sammy Keddington. So those are your top finishers on that FPO side. And then I have to send another big shout out. Pete Uliberry provided me with some drone shots. He went out and captured them the day before the tournament, and then went on to win the tournament. I mean, that's just karma.
That is karma.
And he's like a super great guy. But Pete Ulibarri is your champion on the MP40 side, edging out Chris Waugh. Congratulations. It was a nail biter. And I think this is one of the larger Arizona tournaments that Pete hasn't yet won. And so for him to take this down,
now
he has won. And I had the pleasure of hanging out with his mom, Pat, having dinner on Sunday night, along with the First Light crew, Dan and Robin, and just so many incredible people in Arizona. I could go on for hours about them, but maybe that'll all be in a drop zone some other time. So congratulations to all the competitors, spinners on the green, making the event happen. Just awesome to be there and taking in the Arizona weather, even though it was just 55. You heard zero complaints out of me for the weekend. So, another Shelly Sharp in the books. And thanks for having us out there. All right, well, let's close out the regular show. I said we already have a headliner for our after show, and we'll talk about what she's got going on, along with all other things related to disc golf or not. That's all part of the after show. We'll have a giveaway. We know that's your favorite part, where we give away free stuff. Looking forward to doing that as well. So this has been episode 439. We have to thank, again, our champions in Andrew Marweed, along with Jennifer Allen. We appreciate you guys for joining us. Looking forward to an incredible 2023 and what you guys are going to do in this touring season. For Johnny V, I'm Terry Miller, the Disc Golf Guy. We'll see you in the after show when you step inside the Smashbox.
Thank you to our $2 and above patrons. Your name is listed below in the credits. If you are interested in being listed as a producer in the Smashbox TV credits and supporting this and other fine podcasts, please visit patreon.com/smashboxtv.